This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 4th of July, 2025. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. Excuse me. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. Now let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Civic chiefs call appeal outrageous. School bus crashes into river, and much-loved Marwell Aymer Tiger passes. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
And this is the civic chiefs call appeal outrageous. Clare Group cites council failure to decide proposal. The developer behind the most controversial planning proposal in Winchester in recent memory has taken the plan to appeal against the City Council. Clare Group has appealed, citing the Council's failure to decide the plan within 8 weeks to build 188 houses on farmland off Lanham Lane near Teg Down. Tory Group leader Caroline Horrell branded the move as outrageous. The proposal has attracted more than 700 objections. Reacting to the appeal, Martin Todd, leader of the Lib Dem-controlled Winchester City Council, said, "It's such a flawed proposal in so many ways that it doesn't really matter what process they go after. I can't see them meriting approval. The site isn't in either our current or proposed local plan. But even if it was, the traffic plans alone should justify refusal. I know the City Council will be defending its position very robustly at the appeal." Councillor Caroline Horrell, ward councillor for Wonston and Mitchell-Dever and leader of the Conservative group, called the appeal outrageous. She said, "We're in the middle of the local plan process. The inspector has recently completed their examination and we're awaiting their decision. We have very carefully consulted with the community across the district on the housing that we need and have delivered that proposal for the inspector to review, and this site was not included. I think this developer is trying to use the system and go against the democratic process by jumping in the way that they have. What they are doing is playing with the system and manipulating the process and going against any input from the public. The public, locally, have already indicated in their hundreds that they are not in favour of this. They are clearly, based on this and other examples, developers with no real commitment to the community. They just want to throw up virtually 200 houses against the desire of the residents locally." Reaction to the application from residents has been overwhelmingly negative, with WCC receiving 718 letters objecting to the plans at the time of writing. Only one letter of support has been received. Tarlok Bahambra of Tegdown Meads said, "We already have heavy traffic on Tegdown Meads, and adding an additional 188 houses to use this road is going to cause a hell of a traffic jam on a very hilly road. I completely object to this development." The City of Winchester Trust has also objected, saying, "Winchester District has more than 5 years of housing land supply, so there is no need for any housing development outside settlement policy boundaries."
School bus crashes into river. A bus carrying school pupils swerved off the road and crashed in a river in Bishopstoke on Thursday, June the 26th. The crash injured 17 people, including several students from Barton Peveril Sixth Form College, with many from the Meon Valley, including Wickham, Swanmore and Droxford. The bus, the Blue Star 607 from Knowle, smashed through metal railings and landed in the River Itchen. Police said the driver, a 69-year-old man, suffered serious injuries. Three students with serious injuries, two girls and one boy, all aged 17, have since been discharged from hospital. Of the 15 other passengers, aged between 16 and 18, who suffered minor injuries, three received hospital treatment. Hampshire Constabulary's crash investigation team and Blue Star are investigating. And that headline piece is accompanied by an extraordinary photograph of a double-decker bus sitting by the pavement in the River Itchen and only the upstairs windows showing above pavement level. Seems absolutely amazing how it managed to get there upright.
Much loved Marwell Amour tiger passes. It's a bit of a euphemism, as we shall hear. Marwell Zoo's beloved female Amour tiger Valentina has died, suffering fatal injuries during an introduction to a new male tiger. She has been described as a much-loved and charismatic character of the zoo family who captured the hearts of our teams and guests alike. 8-year-old Valentina arrived from Hodonin Zoo in the Czech Republic in 2020 and was mixed with a previous male tiger, Bagai, who died a year ago, soon after. The incident happened when Valentina was introduced to new male tiger, Pasha. A Marwell Wildlife spokesperson explained that introducing big cats always carries significant risk, both in zoos and in the wild, adding, "Since Pasha's arrival in February, our animal teams have been observing both tigers closely and had noticed encouraging behaviours with no signs of aggression. Our expert teams were monitoring the situation closely, were well prepared, and acted swiftly to draw Pasha away. But due to the speed and nature of the incident, it was not possible for our highly experienced team to intervene, and Valentina had already been fatally injured. Pasha was not severely injured during the altercation. Valentina will be deeply missed by her keepers, who formed a strong bond with her, Marwell's veterinary team, and all the zoos and their guests."
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Dolbear, John, passed away peacefully at Lymington New Forest Hospital, aged 93 years. Gander, Rodney, known as Rod, passed away peacefully on the 16th of June 2025, aged 82. Hansford, Patricia Georgina, passed away peacefully at St Giles View Care Home on the 15th of June 2025, aged 98 years. Knight, Frank, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 3rd of June 2025, aged 91 years. Moss, Brian, passed away peacefully at home on Tuesday the 17th of June 2025, aged 91 years. Reed, Carol Judith Mary, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 23rd of June 2025, aged 81 years. Christian comment has been written by Moira Redmond this week. She writes that we should all be more like my friend Colin. Who's Colin, Daphne?
Ah, we'll find out. Two people going in opposite directions meet on the road. I think we're not talking about recent times here. One says to the other, "You've just come from North Town. What are the people like there?" And the traveller says, "Tell me first what the people were like in South Town where you've just come from." "Oh, they were a miserable lot, mean and awkward." "Oh well, they're the same in North Town." Another person comes along and the same questions are asked and answered. But this person says, "The people of South Town were great. They were welcoming and interesting." The traveller says, "You'll find North Town is the same." A man who overheard all this said to the traveller, "How can you say two opposite things about the same town? They can't be both those things." "Ah," says the traveller, "but they are. I can tell how it will be when I hear about their past experience. It's something in themselves that brings out the best or worst of people." I used to think of this traditional story when I talked to an old friend, a well-known Winchester character called Colin, a neighbour of mine. He died a few years ago, but up till then he led a busy, active life. He travelled with his partner, saw family and friends, volunteered, tried different things. And wherever he went, whatever he did, he would meet lovely people. "They were so kind, they did us favours, we got on so well, they made us feel at home." He was always terribly surprised by this. But if you knew him, you weren't surprised at all. He met new people with the expectation that they would be pleasant, would be new friends, and so nearly always they were. You couldn't imagine anyone taking against him. He was also generous, hospitable, and always ready to help out. And he was the perfect neighbour. Sometimes we all have bad experiences with people. It's going to happen, and it can be tempting then to become defensive, expect the worst, glower at the world. But we get on so much better in life if we make an effort not to do that, but to hold on to our natural tendency, and I believe it is our natural way, to be kind, to be forgiving, to be generous, to give people a second chance. And then with any luck, they'll be the same with us. In the Gospels, Jesus says we must forgive over and over, 70 times 7. But it's not just forgiveness. It's also about being open to others and seeing their point of view. The book of Proverbs 21:21 says, "Whoever pursues righteousness and kindness will find life, righteousness and honour." I wish I could say that I succeed in this at all times, but I do not. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's an effort. When someone has annoyed or upset me, whether I know them or not, I try to think about them. You don't know what my day has been like, and I don't know what your day has been like. And it helps a lot. And I remember my friend Colin, who would be astonished that he has ended up in the Hampshire Chronicle, and delighted. And that came from Moira Redmond.
Thank you, Daphne. And now this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with give due credit over new pavilion, please?
Yes, and this letter is from John Butterworth. Last week, residents in Hyde, Winchester, received a Lib Dem news sheet, namely Focus, in which it informed us that, quote, new pavilion coming, adding that the Lib Dem City Council backs the new sports facility at the heart of the city, together with appropriate photos of the city councillors. Whilst we all applaud the City Council's support for this venture, I wish to point out that the initial instigators of this laudable venture were local grassroots activists, residents and cricket enthusiasts in Hyde itself. One of the chief proponents and fundraisers is and was Mr. Mike Caldwell of Nuns Road. His efforts, together with others in the area, helped to realise the final successful outcome. As yet, no one has thought to acknowledge his sterling efforts over the years to secure a successful outcome. The building of a new pavilion is the fruition of initial grassroots, no pun intended, efforts and vision, and should be recognised and lauded. Their actions were selfless and noble, and meant to benefit all sports enthusiasts, players and spectators, particularly in Hyde and the surrounding districts of Winchester. Many thanks to Mike and his fellow supporters. And that one's from John M. Butterworth, FRSA, Nuns Walk Hyde. And it is accompanied by a picture of the councillors and the contractors involved. I presume Mike Caldwell is not in that picture.
Eileen Berry, former ward councillor there, writes from Hairstock about our beloved city. She feels it's imperative that she addresses this. She says that what comes first, she quotes that, the chicken or the egg. What do we think should come first for this beloved city? Why do people come? Why do tourists come? They come to see the history. The old buildings starting from the cathedral to the quaint little streets. And yes, Abbey House, the Guildhall and various other old buildings. The street itself, the High Street, cannot be changed, thank God. Now, all our little statues, King Alfred, the Buttercross, the Square and some of our ancient pubs like the Eclipse, and of course, the Great Hall. Our museums are not advertised enough. That's what people come to see. Yes, we have our restaurants and small cafes, coffee shops, but they can get that anywhere in any city. But you can't get the history and the beautiful buildings and the skyline of our city of Winchester. Now, Winchester is surviving on its visitors, but if you let the destruction of these ancient buildings happen, they won't come. Why should they? I'll give you an example. I did a tour of Inner Spain. I did three cities, and unfortunately their new developments were box-like, like ours, dead. But when I went to the old part of the city, the ancient part, it was absolutely humming with life. Yes, there were restaurants and pop-up palette places, but it was all colourful and they had kept their old buildings and thousands were going there. So it is imperative, what comes first, preservation. You can do Silver Hill, you can fall into the same trap of having boxes in a dead area after 6 p.m. But the world is changing. Why would you build a new part of the city, a new development, when you can't even fill a pothole and maintain your roads? Another example, Would you build a tower on a hill that was beginning to crumble? You wouldn't. It's unsafe. So, as I said before, what comes first? The chicken has to lay the egg to have a new birth, and that's exactly what we need. Humans, wherever you are, whoever you are, and in this case our beautiful city, we have to know and appreciate our history in words and building to know what it is we are looking for in the future to come. Eileen Berry, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock.
Now, Graham Tillotson writes about the GP crisis. I recently had a long and informative discussion with a local doctor about the state of GP practice in England and Wales, which, as I'm sure your readers are aware, is in crisis. Although I was vaguely aware of the issues, I was shocked when I learnt about the situation in more detail. Characteristic of the way in which party politics gets in the way of sensible long-term planning, it would seem that previous administrations, with good intent, increased the number of available training places where hospital junior doctors could be prepared for GP practice. In many respects, this was a success in that it produced more potential GPs seeking employment in primary care, something I had understood was urgently needed. But this is where the lack of joined-up thinking and long-term planning scuppers what looked to be a good plan. These new potential GPs faced two problems. First, because of the broken financial model for primary care, most can't get jobs. Despite the investment of a significant amount of their time to get that far, and by the NHS in training them. And second, if they are lucky enough to find employment in a GP practice, they have to take a pay cut because of the disparity between the pay scales of hospital junior doctors and newly qualified GPs. Clearly, this is madness. The doctor with whom I had the discussion says that many of his doctor friends are angry that they trained in this country with the intention of working here, only to be confronted by zero or low employment opportunities. So they are now going to Canada and presumably other countries, who welcome them with open arms and where they get paid more to work in a better funded health system, even though they don't want to be there. Healthcare, especially the NHS, should not be an area of government policy which is adversely affected by party politics. Yet it seems to be so. So isn't it time for our local MP and his Lib Dem colleagues to be the grown-ups in the room and to demonstrate their leadership qualities by getting together with the other main parties to forge a 25-year plan? Because that's what's needed. Working together, all singing from the same song sheets, which will eventually result in a national health service that's the envy of the world, where patients can get to see a GP within a day, even for minor ailments, and hospital waiting times are a thing of the past. And that's from Graham Tillotson, Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
Phil Gagg has written about cavalier attitude. In the Chronicle feature last week, June the 26th, on the M3 Junction 9 scheme, you quoted me, correctly, as saying that the benefit-cost ratio with a low rate of growth had been calculated at 0.98, meaning that the scheme will cost more than the economic benefits it will bring. This figure was given in Highways England's revised Combined Modelling and Appraisal Report, Revision 1, issued on the 6th of June 2023. It corrected the original report issued in November 2022. I was shocked that the National Highway spokesperson said I had not been accurate when they were referring to the superseded document. I was also dismayed by their duplicity. On page 150, table 524 of the 6th of June 2023 report, the conclusions are quite clear. The assessment shown in the table predicts benefit-cost ratios for high, medium core and low levels of economic growth. The National Highways spokesperson refers to the cost-benefit ratio for high growth of 1.77. But the UK currently has a low level of growth. So that is the figure that should be applied, the figure I quoted. In any event, all three figures are too low to pass many investment regimes. This cavalier attitude to accuracy by National Highways has promoted a thoroughly bad scheme, and the same sloppiness continues to support a thoroughly bad ministerial decision just before the last election was announced. And that letter comes from Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
Planning appeal. This comes from Lawrence Jones in Dean Lane. Those residents affected by this proposed planning application at Lanham Lane and debated in the Chronicle in the past and on the front page in this week's edition should be aware that the developers Care Homes have made an appeal to the Secretary of State against Winchester City Council's failure to give notice of its decision within the appropriate period on the application for development. This appeal will be considered by the Planning Inspectorate at Bristol. All representations previously made have been forwarded to the Planning Inspectorate. Any additional representations or withdrawal have to be made to the Inspectorate by the 24th of July. And there's a quote, representations must quote the appeal reference. L1765/W-25336746-7467, with apologies, but you can play it back if you wish to follow it up. The appeals officer acting at Winchester City Council is Alice Honan, H-O-N-A-N, who will be aware of the procedure to be followed and details of the City Council's website. Also information available at the planning office at Colebrook Street. It is vitally important that local residents are fully aware of the City Council's views and policy towards Lanham Lane development, together with the nearby Salters Lane development, and they are fully in the public domain. That's from Lawrence Jones, Dean Lane, and you heard earlier from Nick the report elsewhere in paper.
And now Mr. J. A. Maguire writes with some irony, I think, and his letter was headed Town in Disarray. I wish to thank WCC for the complete disaster that the Liberal Democrats have made of this city. Parts of Stanmore could almost be called slums, with bins blocking pavements, cars parked on grass verges, and extensions built seemingly without planning permission. The pavements in town are a disgrace, as stated in many letters to the Hampshire Chronicle, but these complaints never seem to elicit any response from the City Council. Finally, my personal thanks that, at the age of 84 and a Wintonian born in the Brooks area, the Council allows me to cut back the brambles blocking the footpaths so that I can walk from Stanmore to Badger Farm to do my shopping. And that's, as I said, from Mr. J. A. Maguire, Wavell Road, Wavell Way, Stanmore, Winchester.
Stephen Stanford has been getting used to using Winchester's public transport. As I have just reached pensionable age, I was so looking forward to using my bus pass and not having to worry about finding a parking space when visiting Winchester city centre. I have intended to use it on six occasions, but on four of those, The bus failed to arrive at its advertised time, or many minutes thereafter. So I have reluctantly returned home and taken the car, as I have had enough of standing at the bus stop like a meerkat trying to spot a blue object appearing on the horizon. If the City Council is serious about getting people out of cars and onto buses, they need to allocate the contract to a company that can provide a service which is reliable, and not to expect all passengers to be app dependent. Mm-hmm. And that's from Stephen Stamford, Bramshaw Close, Hairstock, Winchester.
Local plan, this comes from Councillor Neil Gwynn, who's the Lib Dem leader for the Tess Valley Borough Council. The draft local plan for Tess Valley is now available for public consultation. The Liberal Democrat group on the Tess Valley Borough Council voted against this document as it currently stands, being sent out for public consultation. They objected for the following reasons: as the house building targets have increased so substantially, we should ask all Tess Valley landowners whether more of them are willing to put land forward for development in order to maximise the choice available. Consideration should be given to park home sites which provide low cost and high density housing. Secondly, consideration should be given to some of the target being met by an across the board percentage increase in housing, so that every settlement has some new housing allocated. Thirdly, consideration should be given to the creation of one or two new garden village settlements. Thirdly, given that local government reorganisation will merge Tess Valley Borough Council with other district councils who provide and manage council housing, discussions should be held with them in order to consider whether council housing targets should be included. With the exception of the last point, all of the other items were raised before this draft plan was put together, but none of them were actioned. But now members of the public, in responding to this consultation, have the opportunity to raise any and all of these points in their own comments. I would urge them to do so. Neil Gwynn, Councillor, Lib Dem Group.
Now, Diane Lever writes about e-bike dangers. Excuse me. This is a very short letter. Without thought, common sense or care, an e-bike cyclist, in quotes, travelled at very high speed up and down busy pedestrianised Winchester High Street, weaving in and out of pedestrians, very narrowly missing one elderly gentleman, as witnessed today, Thursday morning, 26th of June at 10 a.m. It seems that until we have a regular high street police patrol, this idiotic and dangerous behaviour will continue. And that's from Diane Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This one's entitled Knitted Protest. I spotted this woolen placard at a protest rally in Trafalgar Square during President Trump's state visit in July 2018. Knitters against Trump. With an unprecedented repeat visit threatened for September, I do hope this witty repudiation of him will be given a second outing. And that's from Stephen Percy of Easton.
And lastly, among letters, a big thank you. Please can we thank the kind gentleman who stopped to retrieve our beloved family cat from the roadside outside our house on the morning of Thursday, June the 26th, when he was hit by another vehicle. Thank you to Mild May Vets for taking care of him when he was brought in. Stanley has been a huge part of our family, and our house is so quiet now without him. That came from Sandra Brown of Andover Road North.
And there is one more letter. It's very short. It's headed Peace and Harmony, and it comes from Mike Sherwood. I'll just pause a moment. It's gone. Yeah. Our son recently went to Stonehenge for the summer solstice. He said there was a wonderful atmosphere there, with everyone in peace and harmony with one another. It is a pity that the magical spell of Stonehenge cannot be cast over the rest of this troubled world. And that's from Mike Sherwood, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Thank you all. Excuse me. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write an old style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll continue now with editorial comment, first person, and Belgarum. And the editor heads up her article this week with outrageous decision to appeal housing. Nick, your turn.
Yes, this takes us back to the Lanham Lane housing proposal again. It is difficult to disagree with the comment by Tory group leader Councillor Caroline Horrell that Clare Group's appeal is outrageous. Council have 8 weeks to make a decision on application, but the deadline is usually extended with large or complicated applications. The scheme for nearly 200 houses on farmland on the edge of a city is definitely large. But the developer is not prepared to wait and has decided to go to appeal. The Chronicle has asked the Clare Group for its reasons and it has failed to respond, which is pretty unhelpful, to put it mildly. There is no doubt that the Clare Group is playing the system. At the moment, Winchester City Council is finalising its local plan in the light of the Labour government hiking up the housing numbers. Winchester has to plan for 1,157 new homes a year, up from 676. It wants to see 300,000 new homes a year across the UK, which is pretty ambitious. Clare has sneaked in to claim that the council does not have enough sites earmarked for housing, so is offering up its land, whether or not it is a good scheme, which is being fiercely opposed. More than 700 objections have been made, which is only beaten by the proposal in 2020 to develop next to the water garden in Colebrook Street. There is no doubt that Winchester District will have to see many more houses built. But this is not the way to go about it. A chaotic free-for-all with developers ruling the roost is in no one's interest.
And Yinan Ezra writes about the first mayor of Hampshire in first person this week. Paul, over to you.
A great job is going to be available next May. Hampshire and the Isle of Wight will be electing a mayor. Are you a possible candidate? Do you have what it takes? The new role in 2026 will hold significant powers devolved from central government, aimed at giving the region more control over its future. They will include transport and infrastructure, overseeing regional transport planning, including coordination of public transport, road improvements, and potentially new infrastructure projects. This could mean more integrated and responsive transport systems across Hampshire, Portsmouth, Southampton and the Isle of Wight. Also, skills and employment. Influence over adult education and skills funding, allowing the region to tailor training programmes to local economic needs, supporting residents into jobs and helping businesses find skilled workers. Housing and planning, having a strategic role in housing and land use planning, including the ability to direct development to meet regional priorities. This could involve unlocking land for housing or coordinating large-scale regeneration projects. Climate and sustainability. A focus on environmental initiatives such as decarbonisation, green infrastructure and climate resilience, coordinated at a regional level to meet net zero goals. Policing and public safety. The Police and Crime Commissioner's role is likely to be absorbed into the Mayor's office, which means the Mayor will have a say in policing, fire services and criminal justice priorities. This model mirrors other combined authorities like Greater Manchester, where the Mayor acts as a regional figurehead with both strategic oversight and direct accountability. Soon after this election, a year later, the shadow new unitary councils for Hampshire will also be elected, giving them a year to get things sorted. This new executive role is very different from what has gone on before. The need to have candidates of quality is essential. Also, with devolution, this person may even have access to some of the cash currently tied up in Whitehall. Yet, besides the odd bit of media coverage, these changes don't seem to have caught the imagination of the public. I suppose we've all been a little distracted by the wonderful weather, economic issues and international events. But these changes will be here to stay well after the next general election. The historic County Council of Hampshire, along with the district councils, will disappear. So far, a few candidates have thrown their hats in the ring. If things go to form, the political parties will go through a selection process and we will be faced with choosing from that traditional list. Perhaps there is an opportunity to widen the net. The person elected as mayor will need a basket of important skills, a proven track record for getting things done and making things happen, will be an excellent communicator and a good listener. Also, someone who will have credibility with both central government and the new leaders of the unitary councils when they come into existence. Being a good negotiator is essential, as will be an understanding of the needs of both the public and private sectors. Yes, you will have to be superhuman to have all these skills. Hence, knowing where the gaps are and filling them with competent people is essential. The importance of ensuring that the region supports a diverse and inspirational cultural life is a vital component. This is truly an exciting opportunity for any individual, as the potential for shaping the future positively and creatively is huge. A once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the right person. And could it be Yunon Ezra?
Daphne has the Balgarum article this week with a photo.
Yes, now the photo is of the Winchester City Council's cabinet. They are lined up, smiling for the camera, and it's accompanied by a list of who they are and what their responsibilities are. So here we go. We have Councillor Lucille Thompson for Business and Culture, Councillor Steve Cramoisan, I hope I've said that right, for Recycling and Public Protection, and Councillor Kathleen Becker for Healthy Communities. Councillor Mark Reach will manage Good Homes, replacing Chris Westwood, while Council Leader, Councillor Martin Todd, will be in charge of regeneration. Councillor Kelsey Lurney for Climate and Nature, Emergency. Deputy Leader Councillor Neil Cutler for Finance and Transformation, and Councillor Jackie Porter for Place and the Local Plan. So, there you are.
Thank you all. Now, just got a few little items about what's on in the region over the next few weeks. I will start off with an ex-para will deliver a talk an ex-paratrooper who turned his life around by walking the entire coastline of the UK, is to give a talk. Chris Lewis, who started his journey in 2017 with only £10 in his pocket, a broken tent and a borrowed pair of boots, will share his story at the Army Flying Museum at Middle Wallop on Monday, August the 11th. In doing his walk, he raised funds for the veterans charity SAFA, Soldiers, Sailors, Airmen and Families Association. Doesn't say how you get tickets, but contact Middle Wallop. Heritage Railway, the Watercress Line's Diesel Gala, will return from Friday the 11th of July to Sunday the 13th of July, promising an action-packed weekend with heritage engines, excuse me, real ale and hands-on experiences for visitors of all ages. There are visiting engines and a real ale and cider festival. Something for everyone there. That's at the Watercress Line on the Friday the 11th to Sunday the 13th of July. Next, we have a note about the Hampshire Dax Fest 2025. A festival for dachshunds will take place on Saturday, August the 30th, and is expected to be even bigger than last year's event. The festival celebrates the dachshund, community spirit, and responsible dog ownership. Dachshunds will take the stage in their own fun dog show. The event will take place at Westlands Park in Shedfield. And there are various stalls from pet-related businesses, etc. for festival goers to browse through. Last year, the festival drew more than 700 people and more than 300 dachshunds. So, just imagine, says a spokesman, 300 plus sausage dogs in one place. To get tickets, go to ticketsource.co.uk/Hampshire Dax Fest, and it will run between 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and tickets are already on sale. That's Saturday, August the 30th. And rather sadly, the next one is a sellout. Theatre enthusiasts hoping to catch the Chesil Theatre's summer production may be disappointed as tickets are sold out. That's for Shakespeare in Love at the Chesil Theatre from Friday the 11th of July to Saturday the 19th of July. But there is a waiting list for tickets. So if you were wanting to see Shakespeare in Love at the Chesil, contact the Chesil for to get onto the waiting list. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 5th of July, the sun will set at 9:22 p.m. and on Wednesday the 9th of July, the sun will rise at 5:01 a.m. and will set at 9:19 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Nick, would you like to kick us off, please?
Council is rated top in the climate change fight. Winchester City Council has been named the top district council in the country for tackling climate change. The recognition comes from the latest Climate Action Scorecard published by the Climate Emergency UK, which assesses and compares councils on their climate commitments and performance across 9 key areas. The areas are governance, community engagement, emissions targets, biodiversity, and ecological emergency response. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "Tackling climate change is a top priority for the Liberal Democrat team at Winchester City Council because it's real and happening now. Dangerous heat, flash flooding, real problems affecting local people that need practical, hard-headed action. Winchester City Council topped the National District Council leaderboard for 2025, outperforming its regional peers and exceeding the national average score. Councillor Todd continued, "Even though it can feel overwhelming, we all have to play our part. It's an opportunity too. The City Council has managed this at the same time as Winchester has been recognised as Britain's best city for jobs and work opportunities." He added, "I'm really pleased that the targets that I set my colleagues and the plans we're working on with council officers and the team's effectiveness in making them happen have been judged as the strongest of any districts in the country."
Transformation for Forgotten Graveyard. A historic and unloved cemetery in Winchester has been brought back to life after 10 years of work. Thanks to the dedication of Dave and Anna Stewart, a once overgrown graveyard has now become a significant hub for wildlife. The couple, both highly skilled in their respective fields, Anna being a botanist and Dave a geologist and amateur historian, have undertaken, with others, the task of cleaning up the graveyard on St Giles's Hill in Alsford Road. They worked to clear the area overrun by hogweed and brambles and organised regular work days that saw assistance from Rotarians and local residents. This ongoing rejuvenation project has transformed the graveyard into a visiting area worth exploring. From a survey showing 59 different plant species in the graveyard in the early days of the project, a recent incomplete survey indicated the presence of more than 250 species. It is anticipated to eventually reach more than 300. The graveyard has become a haven for rare species of moths and annually sees more than 50 various types of birds. And there's a photograph of a selection of 10 of Friends of St Giles's Graveyard, some familiar faces, and good for them.
Assessment on collapsed historic wall. Historic and archaeological materials from a collapsed wall in Winchester are being assessed. The wall, which fell after stormy weather in 2021, is situated along Hyde's Mill Stream and contains remnants of the medieval monastery Hyde Abbey. Winchester City Council has arranged an assessment of the materials, which include fine architectural fragments and plain worked blocks. The evaluation is being conducted by Pre-Construct Archaeology, PCA, and independent specialist Kevin Haywood. Hyde Abbey was demolished in 1539 following the Reformation, and it is believed the wall was part of a boundary for a large mansion built on the abbey grounds in the late 1540s. The assessment forms part of preparatory work for a listed building application to reinstate the wall. Volunteers from Hyde 900 Community Project have been assisting the PCA team in the effort. Councillor Lucille Thompson, Winchester City Council's Cabinet Member for Business and Culture, said, "These are important works and a key step in the proposed repair of this historic wall, which forms a valuable part in the heritage of our district. We are grateful for the input of the local community as we undertake this work ahead of proposed restoration."
Vintage Bus Group sets up 500k appeal. The Vintage Bus Group marked its 40th anniversary by launching a £500,000 fundraising appeal. The Friends of King Alfred Buses, FOCAB, unveiled the campaign at its anniversary event at Winchester's former cattle market, where 15 classic buses and coaches were displayed. Among the fleet was a 1967 Leyland Atlantean open topper offering free shuttle services for the public. The fundraising appeal aims to restore an old Leyland Olympic bus, JAA 708, which was damaged by fire. This restoration project is the largest the group has ever undertaken. A group spokesperson said, "We used our special birthday to launch our Olympic appeal, aiming to realise funds, £500,000 needed, to restore our iconic chassisless bus, the Leyland Olympic JAA 708. Work has already begun on bringing this fire-damaged bus back to life, the biggest task ever tackled by FOCAB so far, at least." Winchester's mayor, Councillor Sadaka Ackwell, and mayoress, Councillor Vivian Ackwell, officially opened the anniversary event with a speech at noon. They later enjoyed a special ride around the city centre in the oldest bus in the collection, a 1929 Leyland Lion single decker. They were joined by FOCAB's president, Richard Chisnell, grandson of the founder of King Alfred Motor Services, and his wife Maureen and other group members. The spokesperson said, "The purpose of our birthday celebration was to show that FOCAB has a very special place in the life of the city of Winchester and in promoting the study of how we all lived in days gone by. Our tireless efforts as a registered charity run by a dedicated band of volunteers are directing at preserving history for people of today, of all ages, and also for future generations, keeping our history well and truly alive." FOCAB's next event, the King Alfred Free Bus Bonanza, will take place on Sunday, September the 14th, as part of the Heritage Open Day programme. The group's collection of historic buses and coaches will provide a network of free rides from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. connecting people to visitor locations participating in Heritage Open Days. FOCAB welcomes donation towards the preservation of its bus and coach fleet. Aside from the Olympic Fund, the charity needs to raise a significant amount each year just to maintain and conserve its collection. And remember that next Open Day Bus Bonanza is on September the 14th.
Made a note of it already. Paul.
Future of Leisure Centre in the spotlight. Public pressure continues over the future of the River Park Leisure Centre in Winchester. The building has stood empty since 2021, with its future uncertain following the collapse of a deal with Southampton University to develop the site. The City Council held a public drop-in event at the Guildhall. Among those who attended were the Friends of River Park, which is keen to retain the recreational use of the site, sold to the local authority in 1902. Rose Burns of the Friends is unhappy that the building is being allowed to deteriorate. Money set aside for demolition was to come from the university and has so been lost since the partnership fell apart in April. She said, "Councillor Todd, the leader's announcement at the Cabinet in February that there was an allocation for £2 million to demolish the building was predicated on the basis that the university's payment, £7 million, would cover it. Now that the university has withdrawn, the budget no longer exists, and this is bad news. The Friends are unhappy that the draft local plan has the site designated for non-residential educational and cultural uses, as well as indoor sport, but not outdoor recreation such as a Lido. They believe it is legally unsound and breaches conditions of the 1902 sale. Other local people want to see the centre demolished and a Lido built on the site." Paul Broderick, a campaigner, said, "The Lido Winchester group are delighted to see that there is an outline of a fully consultation process underway to seek public opinion for the redevelopment use of the part of the site. There is a hunger within the city for additional high-quality, safe local recreation options for young people and families in a central and easily accessible location. We are aware that the council is under significant financial pressure, and we are keen to work in partnership with them to identify funding options for the building and maintenance of a Lido. The council points out that the indoor bowling and skate park will be unaffected, as will the green space of the parkland. The cabinet on July the 15th is set to approve the marketing of the site, and Councillor Kathleen Becker, cabinet member for Healthy Community, said, "Our public event on the future of the leisure centre site welcomed over 100 people from across the district. It was great to hear what everyone would like to see at this site and to hear their views about our proposed process."
Project to promote healthy eating is on the menu. Sheltered housing residents have been sharing family recipes in a council-funded project. The Memories and Munch initiative, aimed at combating loneliness and promoting healthy eating, saw residents swap stories and experiment with new recipes. They also picked up cooking tips on how to prepare low-cost, nutritious meals. The project, backed by Winchester City Council, involved Mary Carlton of Munch CIC and life story writer Rachel Lewis. They conducted workshops to gather recipes and food-related memories, which were then compiled into three cookbooks. These cookbooks, enriched with resident stories and photos, were gifted to three sheltered housing schemes. Eve Kimpton, a resident at Richard Moss House, said, "When Mary mentioned old recipes, I thought, oh, that bread pudding recipe might be perfect. In the war, it was used for the soldiers' wedding cakes, and my mum, who was also called Eve, used to make it. This is my first time seeing the cookbook, and it's absolutely amazing. I love seeing my mum and dad and my friends in the pictures on the pages. It was so nice taking part in the project and learning something new from Mary, even though I am 81. Mary from Munch CIC said, "Our aim was to improve participants' confidence in the kitchen. All the new recipes we included in the cookbook had to be easily prepared with affordable ingredients. We also focused on batch cooking, not only to reduce food waste, but also recognising that not everybody is able to cook every day." And there's a picture of the residents together with Councillor Mark Reach, and it is the presentation of their community cookbook, which they are holding up, standing in the garden of Richard Moss House.
Art display at exhibition. Artists from around the county are set to showcase their work at a 3-day exhibition. The Alsford Art Society's annual exhibition will take place at the Community Centre on West Street from July the 4th to July the 6th, with more than 100 pieces of art on display. The exhibition will open each day from 10 a.m, with almost all of the artwork set to be for sale, as well as hundreds of cards featuring original artwork. Sue Gentry, the president of the Alsford Art Society, said, "We have a very varied slate of entries this year, ranging from cool Scottish seascapes to steamy scenes in Spain, Venice and India. There are local landscapes and Norfolk marshes, big cats and tiny puffins, even a ceramic warthog, plus a bloom of flower studies. Visitors will be asked to vote for their favourite work, with a £50 cash prize and a trophy awarded for the People's Choice Prize."
Big community effort made for Little Eden. A new community garden outside St Barnabas Church in Winchester has officially opened. The garden in Fromond Road, Week, was made by the community for the community, an idea initiated by Stephanie Swan and supported by the vicar, Ed Dines, as well as residents, church members and the police. On Friday, June the 20th, around 30 people helped make the garden and companies such as Dewson, The Range, Sydenham's and Wicks donated resources such as a ton of soil, timber, various plants and vegetables. Stephanie, director of Winchester Garden Festival, said, "I quite like the warm feeling that comes from being good to people in your community. Creating a happy place for everyone where people can find sanctuary and be soulful. I hope that this will lead to other community spaces for people and create a safer environment, especially for younger adults that live around here." The vicar, Ed Dines, said, "This project has been really personal and special to me. It's a mixture of community and business, and we really want people to get involved and make it their own." After deliberation among the church youth group, Stephanie and her team decided to call the project the Little Eden Community Garden. Little Eden's opening ceremony saw a fantastic turnout, with families from the area as well as various church members and volunteers. Offering ice lollies and cold drinks, guests young and old came to enjoy the new space. Lauren Schroeder, a Week resident and church member, said, "It's really positive that businesses see the value in donating to the community. They've done a really good job. There have been people of all different ages, and a lot of people want to donate things from their home. This is a place where people can come and sit and be happy." The opening event began with celebrations of the Winchester District Garden Festival 2025, which ran until Sunday, the 29th of June.
Feedback sought on future of barn store. A community group hoping to reopen a building in a Winchester estate is looking for feedback. Abbots Barton Community Group has launched an online survey to assess what residents want from the barn store in Chandler Road. The group has been working for several years to renovate and reopen the site. The survey was shared by Councillor John Tippett Cooper in a post on Nextdoor, which is a community app. In the post, Councillor Tippett Cooper said, "The Abbots Barton Community Group, or ABCG, are running a survey about turning the Abbots Barton Barn Store into a new convenience store, cafe and activity space. Winchester City Council own the building, but want to give ABCG as much opportunity as possible to get their plan off the ground. Please do fill in their very quick survey about their plans." The survey asks residents what they would want to see from the renovated barn, as well as how often they would visit it and if it would impact their car journeys. A note on the top of the online survey says, "Winchester City Council no longer have a use for the barn store in Abbots Barton, but have agreed that the Abbots Barton Community Group can develop a plan to renovate and reopen it. Our aim is for the barn store to become a viable and valuable asset that serves local residents and can be accessed on foot, cycle or wheelchair from all parts of our neighbourhood. Our ideas include a convenience store, post office, cafe and an activity space which could be used by home workers, for after school tutoring and for yoga lessons and art classes. This project would include important heritage aspects. It would restore the historic barn, which was built in 1799 by Jane Austen's brother, who owned Abbots Barton Farm until 1811. The neighbouring farmhouse was built in the 1490s by the monks of Hyde Abbey. Returning the barn to community use creates an opportunity to highlight the rich history of our local area right up to the present day. Please take a few minutes to share your views. This consultation will close on Sunday, July the 6th. Your feedback is critical. It will shape our plans and inform the bids for funding that will be needed to make this happen. And it's accompanied by a picture of the barn, which looks in very good condition. It's a splendid looking building. And Councillor John Tippett Cooper is standing in front of it with three of the volunteers from the Abbot Spartan Community Group. I think it sounds like a very worthwhile project, very useful to the local community.
Event dating back to the 19th century. Thousands flocked once more to the St. Cross Fete, the country's oldest event of its kind, in dazzling sunshine. There was music, Morris dancers, cakes, pims, and all things fatey on Saturday, June the 28th, for the 157th edition of the event, held at St. Cross Hospital, which dates back to the 12th century. Father Dominic Mielewski, I hope I pronounced that correctly, praised the long-standing tradition, pointing out its importance in keeping the parish of St. Faith, which runs the hospital, going. He quotes, "Last year we raised just over £17,000. If you think that we're doing it from 1:30 p.m. to 5 p.m, that's not a bad hourly rate. We are hoping to match last year's numbers, but you never know. It's quite well advertised and we have a huge volume of people coming through. We had just over 2,500 people last year and we are hoping for a similar number this year." It was Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Ackwell's first time at the fete. He said, "From what I understand, it's been extremely successful. The church does very good things here at St. Cross." Church Warden Jill Beck, who has organised the fete for 16 years and does so these days with the help of St. Faith's Treasurer Murray Dixon, was delighted with this year's event. She said, "It's a massive event. It's been going for more than 150 years. The community know it's going to happen and they seem to love it. And in the magnificent surroundings of the hospital, it's a traditional fete that people seem to like. We support other charities every year, but it's also our main fundraiser. The parish needs to fundraise, like everybody, but it's just well known in the community and everybody loves it. Providing some of the musical entertainment was the Chandler's Ford BB Brass Band, which has performed at the fete for the best part of 40 years. This year marked the first time the band has merged with the Southampton Youth Brass Band at the event.
Campaigners warn of drought in Hampshire. A report by Martin Burton of the Upper Itchen Restoration Community Interest Company predicts that a drought is likely during the coming months due to low rainfall, with 2025 having one of the driest springs on record. Mr. Burton, who is a water resources specialist with more than 40 years' experience, is now urging the public to preserve water to try and ease the drought. "If you look at the figures, I think it is easy to understand that there is a risk of drought, looking at the recent rainfall. Our meeting with Southern Water led them to issue a notice to all customers that we may be expecting this drought. It has already started. In 2022, Southern Water did not get their act together until August, which is way too late. They have learnt that lesson and are now working with others like us, the Wildlife Trust, Test and Itchen Association, the Rivers Trust, to make people aware earlier that we need to conserve our water. Don't use it now, leave it in the chalk. Then that is a reservoir for us, and that's a bucket of water which we can draw out of later when we need it, when we're down to really low levels that I predict are coming, unless we have dramatically more rainfall in August and September. Southern Water has been urging customers to save water in an effort to mitigate the impact of the hot weather. The company has issued advice such as taking shorter showers, using a watering can instead of a hose in the garden, and reusing water from paddling pools if possible, and actually not leaving the tap running when you're cleaning your teeth. Director for Water, Tim McMahon, said, "The driest spring for more than a century and the forecast for a hot summer ahead means our water resources are coming under increasing pressure. No more so than in Hampshire, where the levels of the Test and Ritchen rivers, which are the main sources of local water supplies, are falling. To protect these precious chalk streams in their delicate ecosystems, we are restricted on how much water we can take from them. That's why it is vital we reduce demand, and this may involve introducing some restrictions."
Charity appeals to keep groups free. An independent charity for older people in Hampshire is appealing for help to keep its important social groups free. As Age Concern Hampshire, ACH, celebrates 40 years of supporting older people, a vital appeal for funds has been made. The social groups run by the charity have improved the lives of many older people across the county, but now it has said that they are under threat due to the end of previous funding streams. Rather than introducing participation fees, which many would be unable to afford, Age Concern Hampshire is appealing to the public for financial help. To maintain the sessions for people who do not have extra disposable income, members of the public and Hampshire residents are encouraged to mark the charity's, quote, milestone year by ensuring that older people across the county can continue to access these groups. To donate, go to lowercase crowdfunder.co.uk/p/wellbeing-groups-4-older-people. Funds raised will be used to cover the coordination and delivery of the groups. A spokesman said, "Keeping these sessions free at the point of access remains central to the charity's mission of inclusivity and sustained support."
Full-scale Titanic date. A date has been set to see a full-scale replica of the world-famous doomed ship, the Titanic, sail from Southampton to New York, just as it did in 1912. More than 115 years on from the maiden voyage of the ill-fated Titanic, an Australian billionaire has set his sights on recreating the iconic White Star Line cruiser liner and sail her from Southampton to New York. Hopefully, billionaire Clive Palmer's Titanic 2 won't meet the same fate as her 1912 original when it is launched from Ocean Village in 2027. But before the ship can sail, she first needs to be built. For more than a decade, businessman and former member of the Australian House of Representatives, Clive Palmer, has teased his plans to launch Titanic 2. First announcing his plan in 2012, so far nothing has gotten off the ground. But Palmer has now said construction will begin next year, and his company, Blue Star, is seeking proposals and construction plans from builders. The ship is set to be an exact replica for the RMS Titanic, although it will correct the mistakes of its predecessor, being fully kitted out with lifeboats and a modern navigation system for iceberg avoidance. Palmer told Rolling Stone, You'll remember in the movie you had the guy in the crow's nest saying iceberg. That was because from the bridge you couldn't see over the bow. We can't do that today, so we've had to put a whole new deck in the Titanic. We're going to make sure that in every room there'll be a little panel that will tell the history of the person who occupied that cabin.
Itchen Abbas Primary School marked its 150th anniversary on Monday, June the 30th, with a celebration on the school grounds, bringing together pupils, staff, families and the wider community. Head teacher Rob Bogan reflected on the school's founding in 1875 and its long-standing role in the village. He said it is an honour and a privilege to be the head teacher of Itchen Abbas Primary School on this special day. 150 years ago, a group of determined individuals had a vision to educate, to nurture, and to create opportunity for generations to come. That vision lives on in every classroom, every playground laugh, and every achievement we celebrate today. Special guests included Margaret Hoskisson, the great-granddaughter of an early head teacher, Hannah Shoesmith. Her presence brought what the school described as a deeply personal connection to the school's beginnings. Local historian and author David Taylor also attended. He has recently published a book about the early days of the local school board, capturing what the school called the rich and often surprising history of education in our area. A highlight of the day was the unveiling of a new mural featuring the school logo, which was designed by parent and artist Jonathan Chapman. The mural invited handprints from children, parents and staff to create a lasting symbol of unity. Pupils also took part in time travel themed activities, reenacting school life in the Victorian, Edwardian, World War II and 1980s eras. Lessons and activities throughout the day reflected the changing nature of education across generations. Mr. Bogan said, "Our school may be small, but we stand small. Today we celebrate all we have been, all we are, and all we are yet to become." Itchen Abbas is a rural village on the River Itchen, about 4 miles north of Winchester. The church was originally Norman and was rebuilt in Victorian times. Farming of watercress created the need for the railway service, now known as the Watercross Line, which was also a vital transportation link during both World Wars. And there's a lovely photograph of the entire school and adults, grown-ups, and the a mural which has the 150 in outlined in gold. It's very large. It's the size of the height of the average child.
Festival was fizzing with fun to celebrate sparkling wine. Vineyards of Hampshire Fizz Fest has returned for yet another edition, with thousands descending on the Rames Vineyard near Hinton Ampner in gorgeous weather to sample some of the county's, and perhaps the world's, best sparkling wines. There was a vast array of English fizz on offer as wine producers from around Hampshire showcased their produce. With street food, cocktail masterclasses, live music, and of course plenty of wine, the crowds were kept happy from 12:30 p.m. until 4 p.m. Host and owner of Rames, Augusta Rames, was delighted with the turnout and spoke in glowing terms about the area's top quality sparkling wines. She said, "The wonderful thing about today, I think, is that local vineyards can collaborate together for a sort of summer celebration and work together in harmony and get together in a tent and pour their wines and listen to music. We take it in turns to host it, so this is my second time hosting. There's a lot of things which work in our favour in Hampshire. We've got the right soil, the right climate, and Hampshire is now one of the leading wine-producing counties in the UK. Representing Hattingley Valley Wines, located north of Horsford, Rebecca Fisher was equally positive about the event. "I think year on year it's growing and growing," she said. "It's such a jovial event and everyone's smiling. Why would they not?" Speaking about what makes Hampshire's sparkling wine special, she added, "We've got a beautiful climate and of course it's stunning today. We're following in the footsteps of Champagne, but doing it with a twist." Behind the counter at the shop, again in quotes, where revellers could buy bottles of some of the county's best wines, was Annette Moran, who is studying for a diploma in wine tasting. She argued that English sparkling wines are among her favourites from any country in the world. "I think it's an amazing amount of top quality wines, and here people have a chance to try those wines," she said. When asked why she is such a fan, she added, "It's a combination of the terroir and the absolute dedication of the people in the wine industry." And there's a picture of Augusta Rames holding a bottle of her Rames wine, and a lovely picture of picnickers sitting in the sunshine on a field having their picnics, and of course there's plenty of fizz to go round.
And here's another drink related piece, Pub of the Year Award. A Hampshire country pub whose landlord saved it from destitution has been voted the county's best. The Wanston Arms in Wanston has now scooped three major accolades after it topped the list in Camera's Hampshire Pub of the Year 2025 competition. It was also voted the county's best small pub by the Telegraph earlier this year, and in 2018 won Camera's Pub of the Year award. Landlord Matt Todd transformed the pub, buying it after frequenting it for 11 years as a regular. Originally from Cumbria, Matt decided not to serve food. Instead, on Tuesdays, a pop-up van serves fish and chips, and on Fridays, chefs from the Light of Bengal, a Winchester restaurant, come along to prepare authentic curry dishes. The awards scooped by the pub have boosted business, with punters travelling from as far afield as Scotland and the Isle of Man to sample its real ales.
Fans of Take That are in for a treat this July. The tribute act, The Take That Experience, described as the closest thing to Take That by the original band's manager, will be returning to Theatre Royal Winchester. They will take to the stage on Friday, July the 18th. The tribute band, formed more than 10 years ago, as Take That, celebrated over 30 years as one of the UK's most popular boy bands. The Take That Experience will perform 90s classics as well as some of the band's more recent hits. This includes songs such as Pray, Relight My Fire, Shine and Rule the World. The band is said to have an incredible vocals and replica costumes which help to recreate the magic of the original Take That. The show also features a Robbie Williams who will perform some of the singer's most popular songs, such as Angels, Rock DJ and Candy, Theatre Royal, Winchester.
Plenty of choice at New Burger Restaurant. A new burger restaurant boasting an enormous menu has opened in Winchester. Burg R. Don, located at Wavell Way, is the latest spot added to Winchester's diverse culinary offerings. As the name suggests, the restaurant offers a wide variety of burgers. Options range from the classic beef burger to the big boy, packed with seven different toppings. Chicken burger enthusiasts can choose from the classic chick, a standard chicken burger, to the very hot Diablo, which comes glazed with very hot Nashville sauce. Vegetarian options are also available, including the falafel and falumi burgers. Besides burgers, Berg R. Don offers a range of other fast food favourites. Fried chicken tenders and wings are prominent on the menu, alongside doner kebabs, a grilled chicken salad box, and strips of grilled chicken. For side dishes, the menu is just as varied. Fries come in several styles, from clucking dirty fries loaded with chicken, hot cheese, parsley, ranch, and house sauce, to smashed beef fries topped with beef, cheese, caramelized onions, and burger sauce. Customers can also customize their fries and other sides, including onion rings, chili cheese bites, and mozzarella sticks. Desserts like waffles, ice cream, and milkshakes are also available, along with a kids' menu. The restaurant, which had a grand opening on March the 29th, has opened in the unit formerly occupied by Jaipur Spice. Berg R. Don is also available for home delivery via Just Eat, Deliveroo and Uber Eats, where it has generally received positive reviews.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you finish with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet and return it as soon as possible. Many thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. Until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.